Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, coming at you from Ord Mandel, just chilling here at an outside cafe with my good friend and fellow Jedi Master, John Mills.
Yeah. I'm kind of keeping an eye around the corner here if we're on Ord Mandel. Couldn't we have met at a Broa Sky or something like that?
You know? I don't know. I mean, it's not my fault the council set us here, so...
It was a strict misunderstanding. I'm pretty sure they meant to send us someplace else. I'm a little sketchy about this.
Well, I'm really glad that we are able to come to you here for another episode of Aggressive Negotiations. And man, I'm excited. We've got some fun stuff to talk about tonight, John. But before we do that, I really want to say a huge thank you to everybody who helped us out over on Apple Podcasts as we did our review contest, which we had so much fun doing, and really appreciate everybody doing that. You know what, though? We can always use more star ratings and reviews to help out the show. So find us over on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to the show. Also, make sure that you do give us a star rating and review. And when you do, we will thank you profusely on the show and read out what you have to say. You can also find us all over the place on social media. And there you should be following us. You should be liking us. So a couple places to follow us. Over on Twitter, you got at Join Nerd Party, which is the entire network's account. And you've also got at The Jedi Masters, which is the show account. So both of those places you should be following. And then you should like us over on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty, where we post all the shows. You can see everything that's going on in The Nerd Party. You can converse with other listeners of the show and, of course, hosts. John and I love talking to anybody who talks about the shows with us. We post the show there, you can comment under it, and we'll comment back about what we talked about. It's always so much fun. And then, of course, last but not least, you can find thenerdparty.com, and over there you can send us an email if you'd like at thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose a show, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and that comes to John and I so we can talk to you that way. But John, yeah. When I said we got something fun to talk about, I really did mean fun. And
yes.
They have started, not too long ago, a new Darth Vader series, which is taking place comics-wise. And it's actually in the timeline right after, like legitimately right after Episode 3. And so we are getting to see Vader at a very formative time, very similar in a lot of ways, I think, to the Dark Lord Rising book, that same time period.
Yes.
Which is to me, if you're going to do Darth Vader, this is the time period that I really want to see what happens, you know, like because this is the time, I think, where the turmoil inside of Vader is at its peak. And what I love, I have to say, about these first five issues that they do that we're going to cover tonight, that really comes through. Like, the turmoil of everything that's happened to him, it's no wonder that he just keeps lashing out at people all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely the most dramatic time period, I think, for Vader. I mean, with the exception of Episode 3, obviously, that's a pretty dramatic time, and traumatic. But I think that examining the aftermath, there are a couple of specific time periods and moments in Vader's life that I think have always captured people's imaginations. And in the, you know, in the 1990s, it was the constant retelling of his search for Luke between Star Wars and Empire. Vader's Quest was the comic book. I think Dark Horse was still the imprint at the time. And you had short stories. You had all of these things that were covering that and sort of like reforming that as understandings changed. I think that this series is really interesting because it takes a time period that we visited with James Luceno's book and redoes it in a way that is, it's almost one of those things where if you're going to redo a story that's already been told, essentially, in the EU, I think this is the way to do it because it,
yeah,
it falls very much still in line with our understanding of episode 3. So it's just an alternate take on what Luceno covered. And so it's not something where I'm going to be like, oh, you're overwriting it. It's something where I'm going to be like, we have a bigger understanding. So maybe it is time to revisit this and readdress it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I love about doing this is that the whole thrust of this first five books in this comic series is Palpatine sending Vader on the mission to find his lightsaber and teaching him what it means to be a Sith and to create your lightsaber and how that is done. And I really, really like that opportunity to tell this story now after all that we have learned, you know, through the Ahsoka book about the idea of, you know, bleeding the lightsaber crystal and what that means, and actually getting to see that process by the end of this was phenomenal. But I have to ask you, you know, we start here at the beginning in this first issue, and it's when, you know, Vader is just being born, and it's the whole, you know, no. And we see something that wasn't in the film where Vader throws Emperor Palpatine up against the wall. And I kind of like that his force blast is so massive that it caught Palpatine unawares. I thought that was kind of a nice touch.
I agree. It's a nice touch. I like the idea, too, that the way the panels build is it does build. It's like Vader's anger just keeps going and going and going and can't control it. And what it sort of changes a little bit of the perception of in the end of the novelization where they address why isn't the Emperor thrown around, and it's, you know, he could detect the Emperor, but he wasn't going to throw anything at him or like I forget specifically why, but they had a, you know, Stover had a line in there saying why he didn't hit the Emperor with it. But I do like the fact that he just eventually got so out of control. He was lashing out at every last thing in that room. What I like even more about it is that the Emperor not just is caught awares, but takes control of the situation again and asks Vader specifically, either do you want to get this under control or do you want to die right now? And I've always said that it's a very interesting twist that it would be so understandable if Anakin gave up. He wakes up and he says, oh, I can't even go on anymore. But here it shows again, I think it even adds another layer to the whole question of whether he was truly doing it for Padme or not, or was Padme his excuse to go down this path that he kind of wanted to go down anyway because he was obsessed with power. And I honestly think his answer here that he just wants to keep on living with this. I think that adds a potential interpretation there that he's maybe coming to realize that it wasn't just about Padme that was driving him down that path, that it was he gave himself a reason to go down that path.
You know, I think that's really good because, you know, we'll be jumping around to all five parts of this. So,
yes,
you know, if you haven't read it, we're going to be spoiling it rotten. But I think that what you're saying is supported by the end where he is trying to turn the lightsaber crystal. Mm-hmm. And it shows him a possible future where he gives in to the good side.
Yes.
And he squelches that. And that is where he pours all of his rage and hatred into it and is able to bleed it. And we see him mourning Padme at that moment. We see him returning to Obi-Wan after he's killed the Emperor and taking his helmet off, and almost like this penance, you know, of you were right, I was wrong. It's really beautiful, and then it's heartbreaking, of course, when he just obviously he's not going to do that. But the fact that he has that chance there. This, I think, this book here shows more than anything what you're saying, which is Vader can't deal. I don't think Anakin can deal with the decision that he did make. And so his only recourse is to just give in to the hatred and allow it to completely consume him, because it's the only thing that keeps those kind of thoughts at bay. If he keeps feeding the hatred, he can keep that good side of himself. To get real spiritual for a second, it's when you squelch the Holy Spirit, right? And it stops talking to you after a while.
I do see what you're saying, and I like your thought. I think that there, and I hinge very much on what else you were saying, which was he makes the choice to be consumed with rage so that he doesn't have to think about it.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to be angry about things than to try to figure them out and make them right again or admit fault. Sometimes it's just easier to be angry all the time.
Right.
And
I mean, it's not like we're going to get Darth Vader on the couch talking about his feelings.
Right. Exactly. And as part of that
with
vision,
the Emperor, tell me how you feel.
Right. Well, and that was something actually in Luceno's book in Dark Lord Rising, where he, he's kind of pouty at first.
Yeah.
And the Emperor actually has enough of it and is like, well, he basically says, he's like, get over it, man. Come on. You know, you won. Now let's go do our thing. That doesn't happen here in this book. But during that last temptation of Darth Vader, where the crystal shows him, you know, a different path, not only does he take his helmet off and kneel before Obi-Wan, he asks him to end it.
Yeah.
Says, please make this end. And it's really interesting because I think you could debate back and forth that if the crystal had shown him simply, you could apologize to Obi-Wan if it hadn't shown him dying. Because I think Anakin has a real fear of death. And is it questionable that, you know, the potential future being shown to him by the crystal just went that one step too far, and that's why because he sees death as the only end to that course that he takes. If it had shown him riding off into the sunset or whatever, if you will, or, you know, going into retreat and Obi-Wan forgiving him, maybe he decides a different path or something like that. No idea, but I think is the testament to the very storyline. And the writer of the series is, I'm going to mispronounce the last name probably, Charles Sewell?
Yes, yes.
Okay, Charles Sewell really does a great job of structuring this in such a way that I read a comic and I'm having the same philosophical discussions that I had after the Mortis arc or that I had after any of these things in the Clone Wars that really spurred these or with some of the arcs that Rebels has taken in the fourth season,
yeah,
where you can have these sorts of debates. And before we go forward, since we are spoiling it and everything, even though we're going to spoil this story and we're having this discussion about Vader, I very much want to emphasize, even if I spoil every last thing about this, even if Matt spoils every last thing about this, the art by Giuseppe Comencoli is amazing. I have been a fan of the comics that have been released under the new Marvel imprint because I'm a huge fan of comic art, and I think this guy is great, absolutely wonderful. And, of course, Cam Smith and David Curiel for the inks and colors.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I really did enjoy the art here, and I liked the stylization to it because especially, when Vader is fighting people and he doesn't have a lightsaber, like when he's taking on those clones at that repository mm-hmm. for Jedi artifacts and stuff that they've been boxing up, which they're kind of pissed about. And then they also drop in that hint that the last group of clones is being trained, and that's it. Yeah. There will be no more clones. And they're like, well, who's going to protect the Empire now? Which I thought that was really nice. And so that's the other thing I think that Sewell does here, too. He drops all of these things in this area that are just so well done and make so much sense for us to be talking about. You know, like the idea of clones talking about how they're the last ones, or Palpatine rounding up all of these Jedi artifacts because he doesn't want them out there. And I'm sure, too, he wants to see if there's any way to exploit them as well. So that was really cool. It also leads to my question then in my brain, like, did Palpatine destroy all of these Jedi artifacts, or does he keep them hidden? Where did they go? Did Luke find any of them, you know, after Return of the Jedi? We do see here that they destroy all of the lightsabers that they rounded up at the temple and create a small explosion when they do as well, as they incinerate them all. So, I mean, just really... there's so many cool things that happen here that are tangential to what's happening to Vader that I just love reading this comic. Like, I was really having a great time with this reread for myself.
Yeah, and this was my first time reading it, and I regret not having read it before. And even, you know, you talk about how they have the big, you know, pseudo-fascist ceremony with Mos Amedda. I like the fact that they really have been holding on to, because Mos Amedda has always been one of my favorite little side characters. I love the fact that all of these stories seem to drive home that he remains the Emperor's mouthpiece. He's the mouth of Sauron, as it were.
Yes, I really like that
a lot. And when they destroy those lightsabers, just even having that little shot of him throwing Yoda's on last and being able to recognize it as Yoda's saber. But with what we know about kyber crystals, the explosion makes sense. But do you think they later harvested those kyber crystals? Because aren't they basically indestructible?
Yeah, it did make me wonder, honestly, what Palpatine does with all those crystals. And, you know, if he uses them for research or probing, as, you know, he says later to Vader, you know, kyber crystals are alive in their own way, and so and that they can feel pain. And so obviously incinerating them does not feel good. And yeah, absolutely. I feel like Palpatine has nefarious purposes for those lightsaber crystals in some way, shape, or form.
So here's a question for you, and I'll put this idea out there free of charge for the world, because as we're sitting here talking about this, since these crystals are small, we know they're not going to be put in the Death Star or anything like that. You know, because the Death Star, they're looking for larger crystals. They're mining large crystals, right? Wouldn't it be so cool if they pursued this line of thought and developed guns, weapons that use the kyber crystals? And so basically the blaster bolts became unstoppable.
Yeah, like lightsaber blaster bolts.
Yeah, like instead of turning on a lightsaber, you're just sending a pulse of, I mean, obviously the Death Star can fire energy through it,
right?
Or maybe we see that as a you know, a research arm to test the theories that they have. I mean, I would actually love to see a whole like little comic book series where they start doing that, and they're like, oh, okay, maybe we put these in guns and we can have it unstoppable, and like the guns explode and like kill people and stuff like that, and they're like, oh, that's a lot of power, we're gonna need. And like, wouldn't it be so cool to, like, I think that would be neat to have a story like that.
You know, I was kind of thinking along the lines of, too, the research that, you know, we saw in the Plagueis book of him that he did.
And, oh, yeah.
And if, you know, Palpatine maybe carried on any of that kind of thing with these kyber crystals, and seeing, you know, doing the, you know, just like the most heinous, awful type of research projects on, you know, people or, you know, whatnot. So, yeah, I think... The thing that this comic does really well is it exemplifies the time period that we're in. I love how we really show, and they do such a great job of making sure that it's the Clone Wars stuff that we're seeing. So we're still seeing the ARC fighters, the ARC 170s. And that kind of stuff. Obviously, we're still seeing the clone troopers. But man, when Vader takes on people without a lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like throwing things at people, and it is, it's a force of nature. Like it reminds me of that moment, obviously, in Rogue One. And except this mm-hmm. is even worse. Like if you thought that was bad, Vader without a lightsaber is actually worse.
Yeah, and what I find very interesting about it too is I think see another exemplification or outward manifestation of Vader's self-hatred
mm-hmm.
by going in somewhere without even some sort of defense. Like as Anakin would ignite his saber and be able to block the bolts and stuff like that. But he's going in and he's getting hit. He's taking a shot or two, and he just keeps going. And I think it really remolds this idea of somebody who has some sort of like inner conflict or low sense of self-worth isn't going to take care of themselves particularly well. And so when he goes in to fight in a situation, it's taking the punishment. Like he's okay with letting himself be punished in this way as he goes through. Like he feels like he deserves these shots, almost like he's begging fate, where it's like,
yes,
you know what?
Yes.
I don't care. If I'm going to drop, I'm just going to drop, whatever.
So. Well, and I think it was really interesting too, because when he's taking on those clones, they have a lightsaber with them because they're in this like almost like Jedi space temple
mm-hmm.
and they're collecting holocrons and all this stuff. And he gets that lightsaber. He takes these people out, but then he drops it because that's not the lightsaber. He didn't win that from anyone. And what was really interesting is the way that this kind of mirrored Harry Potter's wand lore, in the sense that, you know, if you win a wand from another wizard, that wand almost always yields to its new master if it's been won. If it's been taken and won in a duel. So in a lot of ways, that's what he's saying to Vader, is that no, you don't just get to go pick up a lightsaber that we picked up from the temple. You have to win one from somebody. That's part of this. That's part of the process of starting the transformation of their crystal, is by winning that lightsaber forcefully from that person. And I just thought that was really interesting, because he has the opportunity to take this one, but he's like, because that's not how this is going to work. That's not what is going to please his master, and that's not what's going to make him, you know, a full-on Sith. And then I really got to get to this, John, because we get to this whole character that we've never met before.
Yes.
Of a Jedi who's on this mid-rim river world of Albedadome, or Beldalem, or I don't know. I don't know how to say it.
Aldalim.
Aldalim. There you go.
Aldalim.
And you have this Jedi that we've never met before, which I thought was really fascinating, of this guy who has taken this vow because of something he's done, and he's been on this world, and part of the vow is to remove himself from the galaxy, basically, and only commune with the Force, and to not come back until the Force calls him back. And so even though he's felt the destruction of the Jedi Order, he's waited here patiently for whoever to come. And I just thought that was kind of fascinating, and felt a little Luke Skywalker-ish and not Luke Skywalker-ish all at the same time.
Yeah, I would say not Luke Skywalker-ish. I would say it feels more Yoda-ish, because Yoda goes off and goes into hiding, but he's specifically waiting for the Force to deliver something or some sign to him. Obi-Wan as well. So I think there's more purpose to Kirak Infila. Whatever. That's the worst part about reading them, is that head scratcher of like, how am I supposed to pronounce this?
Yes.
But the there's a purpose to him. He's not just somewhere and waiting to die. He's actually consciously waiting on the Force to show him the way.
Right.
and he's expecting this. There are shades to his character and even his character design in a way to, do you remember the character they came up with during, it was between episode one and episode two, I think. And I think she appeared in Star Wars Tales first or something. The Dark Woman or the Dark Lady. She was this Jedi Master. She had a purple saber, if I believe, and she was one of my favorite little original creations they came up with, where she had left the Order.
Oh, okay.
And was out hiding, and I forget why Vader, I think Vader tracked her down, because of course Star Wars Tales jumped around right. everywhere, and I know Star Wars Tales wasn't officially canon and blah, 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 all of that stuff. But there are shades of her about this, about somebody who's off somewhere waiting for the Force to deliver, and it's Vader that gets delivered to this Jedi Master who then, you know, has to fight him, has to face him down. I really enjoyed him here, though, because he really, really, really... I loved the idea that, because the introduction scene we get to him is he's putting together four quote unquote Padawan traps while fighting his sparring droid.
Yes.
Because he's like, I got to stay sharp. And it's, let me throw this out there to you, because one of the big questions about Star Wars, the original, you know, as the other materials came about and everything, were Obi-Wan was off. Why haven't we seen Obi-Wan doing this? Why is Obi-Wan... I know Obi-Wan's watching Luke, but I would love them, hint, hint, if they ever give us a movie, I want to see what training Obi-Wan is doing. And is it simply a matter of... Because I've always contended that Obi-Wan's just... He's rusty. It's just, you know, a question of time. Or was tapping into the Force. Like, this guy, Kirik Infala, doesn't care right now if anybody knows that he's out there, because he's waiting for the Force to show him the way, whereas Obi-Wan's trying to stay so low on the radar he doesn't want to tap into anything and, you know, set off a little radar beacon.
Yeah, you know, we have seen in the comics Obi-Wan act a couple of times, and a bit like the Kenobi one, not the Kenobi novel, but there is a point where he acts and he, you know, fights near the homestead and everything, and that's what Owen uses to banish him from seeing Luke anymore.
Right.
And so there have been a couple times that, but I do think that you are right in a sense that Obi-Wan does have to keep a low profile in the Force sense. But I can't imagine, I mean, Yoda does tell him, training I have for you in your exile. And so he's obviously been training, communing in the Force, learning deeply of the Force. And so, you know, and yeah, we got to say that by the time he gets to the Death Star, you know, that's not what that fight is about anyway. It's being awesome. It's about doing a job, and he realizes it's to his time to go, you know, and he lets go.
Of course, yeah.
So, but no, I do think that Obi-Wan probably ran through his lightsaber form practices in his hut just to keep his mind sharp and keep himself from going crazy, you know, as a way of meditation almost, you know, like a Jedi Chi instead of Tai Chi.
Let me throw this thought out at you, because, you know, wouldn't it be neat if we found out that he did start off with like more hardcore training like this guy had, and just over time the machinery broke, and because he's on Tatooine, then all he can do is like run through the saber techniques with no opponent. So like he's practicing against air basically. And so he can remember the moves, but it's not the same as when he has to do these certain things. I don't know. That would make sense to me too. But anyway, back to the comic. I thought that the fight was phenomenal.
Yeah. Especially that first one. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh. And the fact that they really did make Vader earn this, that there was no
kind of gets his butt kicked the first time, which is awesome.
Yeah. And the way he wins, that's beautiful and brilliant, is he knows what's the one thing a Jedi isn't going to want to do: let the innocent die.
Yeah.
He, by being a Jedi, he actually knows the worst thing he can do is, all right, I'm just going to kill everybody. And the Jedi's going to be like, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. And Vader's like, no, you're all going to die now. So have fun. See you on the other side.
You know, that is one thing I kind of wondered about the comic, that if he had focused on Vader, if he would not have been able to take him out and saved more people than trying to reason with this thing. Because at this point, Vader is just this thing.
Yeah.
And I understand why Kirik makes that decision. But, you know, obviously armchair Jedi-ing, it's not the right decision, because I think if you just let those guys go over the ravine there and just charge Vader, you still have the upper hand. And you have a weakened Vader as well, because you've already thrown him off a cliff and he's, you know, barely together. He's got robot parts. He's scavenged to make himself put back together. But at the same time, you understand why this Jedi does what he does. It makes sense.
It does. But Vader, once again, is left for dead, presumed dead. And I think it really drives home, because that's what I still have this argument, back and forth with people about, well, why didn't Obi-Wan go down? And just cut him in half. And I'm always replying, he cut off three of his limbs and watched him catch on fire. I think it was a fair call for him to say, oh man, he's dead.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know what I love about that, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but it also shows, and I think that we see Lucas had kind of set up this idea that people can survive really traumatic bodily injury with enough rage through the Force, and that sets up Darth Maul's return. Yeah, he's cut in half, but the Force, the rage and hatred allows him to survive.
You know what this leads to the possibility of, and I'd be open to a comic with it, of Mace Windu turning to the dark side after the fall, being consumed with hatred and anger, and that's how he lives. They don't detect him as a Jedi. And he just goes, like, wouldn't that be pretty awesome?
He just goes
awesome?
On a murderous rampage.
You know, because the thing is, for the longest time, I railed against the idea of Mace Windu being alive. You know, saying, no way, he fell out of there, his arm was cut off. And there are people, there's a host on this network who's very critical of the idea of Darth Maul coming back to life at all. But if I'm going to allow for that, and the tremendous story arc that allowed for, why not have Vader have to go down and find out that Mace Windu is somehow miraculously still alive and half robot or something like that, and have to face him down, and Windu saying, oh, I'm not a Jedi anymore, but I'm sure glad you're here, Anakin, and have, you know, and have him say, we're going to do this my way now. You're not sneaking up and you're not cutting off my hand. We are going to have this out the way I want to do this. And have, I mean, that is a rematch that I would like to see, quite frankly.
Yeah. And I would pretty much just love to see, you know, Anakin get ripped up and, you know, really hurt, but, you know, be able to obviously take him out, but that it costs him dearly, you know, like maybe that's when he gets, like, you know, because you got the suit he gets here in episode 3, you know, so maybe it's when he kind of gets the next iteration of the suit, you know, and I just think that to me, I'm right there with you, it'd be super cool.
Here's a great tie in that you could do, as he goes and he does all of this stuff and he loses more of his real self. He loses, like, his arm at the shoulder and make it his right arm, so that there's even more explanation. Not that it needs more explanation, but it even creates an extra layer when Luke tags him on that arm. for him to be super mad about it. Like, no, not again. I don't know. I think, but see, this is, again, getting back to, this is what's beautiful, is this is issues 1 through 5 of this series. And look what it's done to us. This is comic book tie-in stuff at its finest level. And I cannot compliment the writing enough with this series so far. This is exactly the type of thing I'm looking for. I'm not looking for just repetitive stories or stuff that, yes, this tells the story of Vader's first saber, but I'm interested in that. And I'm interested in, you know, I've been a hard sell on the whole saber bleeding thing.
Right.
I'm finally completely won over here.
Do you think that's because I wanted to ask you about that specifically because I was kind of looking through those panels, and do you think it's because of when they're showing it here? They have 2 huge splash pages, 2 of them. So basically it's 4 pages of what it takes for Vader to finally bleed this crystal.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, it's epic, epic art. Like, it's just gorgeous stuff.
It is.
And not only that, but, I mean, they're also tying it into Rogue One about where Vader is going to build his castle because he's sent to Mustafar when, before he bleeds the crystal, the Emperor says, I had this droid, tell the ship once you got your crystal to take you here, and here at your biggest defeat, you will organize yourself into the first Darth Vader, you know, and
right.
He says, you go here too, because it also has there's a very strong sense of the dark side here on Mustafar, and there you will be able to, with that power, turn this crystal. And I really liked how this all plays together to create a really cohesive whole with all the different parts of the Star Wars lore that they're pulling from. It's just, it's kind of, like you said, it's a masterful job of tie-in work. Like, this is what we want from great, this is what we hope for every book or every comic that we read that is supposed to be canon now and ties in. This is what we're hoping for.
Yes. And I think it even adds the layer to the castle of, I think a lot of us said, oh, that's cold. The Emperor had him put his castle there, and his castle reminds him of his pain and everything like that. But thanks to this arc, Vader's castle now represents, I won. I overcame.
Yep.
It becomes a positive symbol, if anything. And I think that's pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's the darkest version of taking lemons and making lemonade.
Yes, right. Yes.
Sith juice.
Yes. Yes.
That's what he's floating in Rogue One. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. If you had a rating for this, like, what do you think for issues 1 through 5? I think this arc is called The Chosen One. So,
that's tough. I'm not used to having a rating scale for comics, but I'm going to have to say, honestly, with the way everything lines up, issues 1 through 5, I'm giving 5 Kyber crystals. Like, this knocked it out of the park. I seriously, this has shades of the early Marvel stuff. It feels a little bit Brian Daley. It feels a little bit Clone Wars. It feels a little bit everything. And I just keep going back to, the art's fantastic, but above all else, the writing nails it. Absolutely gets it right.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, I think that 100% this is a fantastic arc, and it's what I'd hoped for from the original Darth Vader series. And that series was set a little bit later in the timeline, and this is what I wanted. And so I'm really thankful that they went back to this time period to explore it. I think Charles Soule has done some of his best work here. I really enjoy the writing. And like you said, I mean, we're clearly tying in to all of these different things. And it does have a feeling of some of the old EU to it. There's shades of that. And I think that's the other thing that makes it feel so Star Wars-y. It's like it's seeped in Star Wars goodness. And I really, yes. I got to give it to you. I think you're absolutely right. It just these issues alone, it's 5 out of 5 bled Kyber crystals.
And right now, issues 1 through 6 count as volume 1 on Comixology. It's $6.99, which, considering the average cover price of comics nowadays, 6 issues, these issues for $6.99, I strongly encourage anybody to go out.
Yes.
Buy it, read it. Absolutely.
Absolutely do. Don't miss it. It's great stuff. So, John, if anybody wanted to talk to you more about this or anything else that you got going on, where can they find you online, man?
Well, you can find me as Kessel Junkie, bleeding crystals on your social network of choice, including Vero. And you can also find me right here on the network, co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler. And you can find me out there in the ether, co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. Now, that's my social media and online profile. Matt, you have quite an extensive one. Where can they find you?
Well, you could find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network doing Outpost with Drea Kaufman as we talk all about Harry Potter one chapter at a time. It's a lot of fun, so I do hope that you will check that out. You can also find me on the Trek FM network. Over there, I'm doing The Orb, Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And I'm also doing our General Geek Show, the 602 Club. We cover every single topic that we possibly can on that show because it's all things geeky. So I definitely hope that you will check that out. We just recently had John on to talk about Tron Legacy. We've talked some Star Wars recently with the Legends of Luke Skywalker book. So yeah, it's all over the place. You can also find me doing a show with my friend Courtney called Cinema Stories, and that's where we talk all about films through the lens of faith. And you can find all the shows I do and all the shows that John does anywhere you get your podcasts. But John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I kind of think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the Nerd Party.